Indie Media is DIY news. It's about people reporting their own news directly without the need for reporters, bypassing the corporate media.
There are 100 Indie Media or IMC websites worldwide providing grassroots reports of struggles, campaigns and protests.
There are so many people here who are saying no to the government today, and this is democracy in action.
Everybody's here. Everybody in the country seems to be here. They're just coming from all over the place. The banners are showing all the tiny, tiny little pockets of the country. Everybody has come down here.
The project started 3 years ago covering the massive Seattle protests which shut down the World Trade Organization summit.
Uncensored and unsponsored, IMC sites can be updated anywhere, anytime, by anyone.
The open to all nature of these sites means that you can publish your own reports about your own issues and at the same time connect to a global network of grassroots news. What you are about to hear are some highlights from these global websites and from our very own UK IMC Wire. For more information or to get the news direct from the streets, check out www.indiemedia.org.uk.
The world is waking outside my window. Bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Direct my senses into the sunlight, for there are things that I must do. Wish me luck now, I have to leave you. Ciao, bella, ciao, bella, ciao, ciao, ciao. With my friends now up to the city, we're gonna shake the gates of hell. And I will tell them, we will tell them, bella, ciao, bella, ciao, bella, ciao, 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 that our sunlight is not for franchise. I wish the bastards drop down dead. Next time you see me, I may be smiling. Ciao, bella, ciao, bella, ciao, ciao, ciao. I'll be in prison or on the TV. I'll say the sunlight dragged me here. Bella, ciao, bella, ciao, bella, ciao, ciao, ciao.
Fisher called it in his last programme.
Yes, there were technical difficulties last week with streaming the radio show during the dicey anti-arms fair protests, but we'll be bringing you a roundup of what went on there later in the show. And that last tune, Chumbawamba's version of Bella Ciao, goes out to all of the protesters from 2 years ago at the Genoa G8 protest summits in Italy, and we'll be bringing you news later in the show of the inquiry which is ongoing into the brutal raids against indie media and people peacefully sleeping in the school opposite. We'll also be bringing you some of the latest news and views from the indie media newswires across the country. But first, if you've had your head buried in the sand, maybe you haven't heard of what's been going on with the WTO talks that have just collapsed in Cancun. Well, the global justice movement has hailed it as a significant victory as the WTO Cancun ministerial meeting collapsed as delegates from developing countries called the bluff of the EU and the US and pulled out. The scene at the convention centre where the delegates were being held was jubilant, as both delegates from the developing countries and NGO representatives regarded this as a victory for the developing world. Many others, however, disagree. The developing country members of the WTO refused to accept the EU's demand to expand the WTO by including negotiations on new issues, including investment, government procurement, trade facilitation, competition, and so on. This resulted in the talks collapsing. The EU had linked the expansion negotiations to agriculture, even though the Doha Declaration delinked these two areas and required explicit consensus to launch the new issues. The collapse followed a night of secret meetings in which the EU and US used high-pressure tactics, bribes, and threats to force less powerful countries into submission, or try to. This was a tactic as used at the WTO talks in Seattle and probably at every other WTO meeting. In the end, it was strongly resented by delegates from developing countries. The developing nations hope to send a clear message to the rich nations that their bullying tactics will not intimidate them. The G21 grouping was called a grouping of the paralyzed by the United States trade representative, with rhetoric but no ability to negotiate. The G21, however, put forth many alternatives rebuking the US claim of mere pontification. This has proven that the balance of power within the WTO has drastically shifted, and of course China's entry no doubt being very significant within that. The powerful and rich nations have faced a defeat. Much is still at stake, and a US trade representative, Robert Zulik, has threatened that the US will now concentrate on regional and bilateral trade agreements like the Free Trade Area of the Americas, or the FTAA. Critics of global capitalism everywhere are already preparing for the Miami FTAA ministerial coming up soon. So civil society is celebrating what they see as the victory of democracy and the power of the people. There's extensive coverage at the Cancun Indie Media website, which has an extremely long URL. So if you're interested in any more of that, check out the global Indie Media portal at www.indiemedia.org. And next up, a couple of pieces giving a little bit of flavour about what's been going on and some background information on some of the solidarity protests.
Wielding iron bars and wooden staves and pushing battering rams made of palm trees and telegraph poles, peasant farmers, indigenous peoples, the landless of three continents, trade unionists and veterans of Seattle and other protests squared up on the barricades to thousands of riot police. Instead of violence, the crowd chose to ceremonially burn an effigy of the organisation and to wave flowers. Credit for the peaceful conclusion of a week of intense protests against the WTO was mainly given to the Korean delegation of trade unionists and farmers, with many still in shock after the suicide earlier in the week of their colleague Lee Kwai-young-hae. Their leaders appealed to protesters to mark his death with ceremonies and symbolic gestures. Bringing hundreds of yards of rope and singing four abreast, the Koreans marched to the 4-metre-wide, 3-metre-high barricades. As Western protesters mounted the barricade and cut their way through its outer ring of steel, the riot police advanced from their positions, beating truncheons against their shields. The Koreans then attached ropes to the frame of the fence and for 3 hours proceeded to pull it down and break it up piece by piece. The wire was passed over the heads of the protesters and large sections were dumped on the edge of mangrove swamps. In complete silence, Korean and Mexican leaders then paid tribute to Mr. Lee and claimed they had symbolically defeated the WTO. "We will not make Mr. Lee's death meaningless. We wanted to destroy the conference, but we are going to protest with flowers," said Ton Yang Chang of the Korean Farmers League. And that excerpt was from John Vidal.
There were several UK solidarity actions with the Cancun WTO protests. On Friday the 12th of September, to coincide with the WTO talks in Cancun, a group of 15 concerned citizens occupied a Bayer office and stopped work there to demonstrate against the corporatisation of health and agriculture and the impact of WTO patent laws on agriculture and medications. The campaigners said the solidarity action took place for two reasons. First, the WTO drug patent laws, which are to be reinforced in the next couple of years, will mean countries like India, Brazil and Thailand, who make cheap versions of essential drugs, will have to buy them at inflated prices from a large multinational pharmaceutical company. Bayer Pharmaceuticals is one such company. Second, patenting of rice, maize and other basic crop genes means that small-scale farmers in both the developing world and the rich West are no longer allowed to save seeds. Instead, they will be tied into spending large amounts on buying seeds and pesticides from agricultural multinationals such as Bayer Crop Science. As a result, farmers for many of the world's poor will become sustainable and the trends towards large-scale corporate farming enhanced. Anna Key, one of the participants, voiced her concerns. I quote, WTO patent laws, whether they concerned drugs or plants, are in the interest of large multinationals and rich nations. Their impact will be to increase world inequality, poverty, lack of access to cheap life-saving drugs, and wipe out opportunities for local subsistence farming.
Sidestep nations who just get in the way because their people have too much of a say. But boys, we have got the answer. Free trade, it sounds really good. It spells freedom for the corporate brotherhood. And you need us in your neighborhood with new global employers. Oh honey, let's join the WTO. Make lots of money at the WTO. We can change a few laws, fix democracy's flaws. It's the corporate new world order. Unions are a pain in the ass. They cause problems, give executives gas. They want fair wages for the people who work. What? A bunch of jerks, poor children, must be taught how to live. They need employment, so they'll have money to give to corporations who are making their clothes. The child labor laws must go. Oh, honey, let's join the WTO. Make lots of money at the WTO. We can change a few laws, fix democracy's flaws. It's the corporate new world order. People of America fret, turtles and dolphins who were caught in the nets. But it takes money to free all these pests. And that's a free trade barrier. Clean air is a luxury for some, but let's be fair. It's not for everyone, cause goods are cheaper. If you release a little scum, defend your freedom of pollution. Oh, honey, let's join the WTO. Make lots of money at the WTO. We can change a few laws, fix democracy's flaws. It's the carbon.
And now to an update on the Genoa G8 inquiry in Italy, where recently the post-G8 summit inquiry into the brutal police raids against the Indie Media Centre and the Diaz school building on the night of Saturday the 21st of July has entered a new phase. After 2 years of interviews and interrogation, the inquiry has listed 73 police chiefs, officers and a small number of doctors as alleged accomplices in the beatings and subsequent torture of scores of anti-globalisation protesters and others unlucky enough to have been caught in the brutal raids. Among the 30 accused in relation to the actual raids are the most important chiefs of police who directed the raids. They stand accused of assault, slander, false arrest and abuse of authority, and also of fabricating evidence. Two Molotov cocktails or petrol bombs were brought into the school and were later used by the authorities as justification for the raid. They are also accused by the prosecutor of faking evidence of a stabbing by doctoring the stab-proof vest of another police officer. Among those listed are Vincenzo Cantarini, who was responsible for the 7th anti-riot unit created specifically for the G8 demonstrations, and the first section of the Mobile Police Unit of Rome, who led the raid, as well as his second in command. Francesco Gratteri, the then director of the Central Operations Services and his second in command. Gianni Luperi, who was then second in command to La Barbera, the chief of the Usigos police. Spartaco Mortola, the then chief of the Genoa Digos, or the political police. Pietro Troiani, of the Rome Mobile Unit. The director of the Mobile Unit of La Spezia. The commissioner Fabio Quincamara, of the Naples Mobile Unit. And the chief of the Mobile Unit of Nuoro. Several direct subordinates to the assistant chief of police, Andresai, and three other police directors are also listed. Out of just over 90 people who were arrested during the brutal raids 2 years ago, 62 people needed medical treatment, while 28 people, almost all with serious head injuries, needed hospitalisation. Three people were on the critical list with broken bones, ruptured lungs and other internal organ damage, including one IndyMedia UK volunteer. It is now expected that the investigation and possible court cases will be continuing in around 2 weeks' time.
Per il mondo che non rappresentate, lo sfruttate fino in fondo, ingiustizie autorizzate. Non ci sto in questa sporca situazione. C'è chi ancora in questo mondo muore ogni giorno di fame. Voi invece discutete dal mio discuto spaziale. Non volete dialogare con il popolo che lotta, piombo e manganellate sono la vostra risposta. Non promessi mai in difesa della nostra terra.
And just a little bit of extra information from that last story about the G8 Genoa Diaz inquiry. The list we read out of many of those senior police officers, there's in fact many more officers, senior officers as well, listed in relation to Bolzaneto, which was the military detention centre used for dealing with many of those arrested during the G8 protests 2 years ago, and where all of those not hospitalised during the raids we were talking about earlier were taken. While in detention, many of them were then tortured, assaulted and brutalised, some being forced to sing fascist songs during their ordeal. The charges against police and some of the medical staff at the Bolzaneto facility include torture, infliction of injuries and wounds, verbal abuse, omission of official facts and omission of official reports. Last May, the judge, Anna Vivaldi, decided to close the cases against the 93 victims of the raid, saying that there was simply no evidence against them. Further, she said that the evidence presented against them by various police units and directors was unreliable and falsified. And as we said earlier, the proceedings against the police in Italy are now expected to move forward into the next phase in around 2 weeks' time. Next up, we've got some news from the UK newswires.
Yes, a story we've been covering for a while, the RFID chips. Well, unaware shoppers are being photographed and tracked by SmartShelf in as Gillette photo surveillance hits Asda. SmartShelf surveillance cameras and RFID radio frequency transmitters hidden in the packaging of Gillette razor products. Shoppers at Asda in Ellesmere Port and probably many other locations are being photographed by a camera at the top of the Gillette display unit, which goes unnoticed by most people. A photograph is taken of every shopper picking up Gillette products, whose packaging contains a tiny RFID device which transmits to readers up to 30 feet away. A similar experiment in Tesco at Cambridge was abandoned after a 10-day protest. An active campaign against Gillette is ongoing. For more information, see www.nocards.org.
Staying with the same issues, this month Labour is blowing up, is brewing up, should I say, a whole cauldron of new privacy intruding measures to keep us safe and well. Compulsory ID cards are looking more likely, and proposals for all children to be given a number and monitored are being seriously considered. Successive governments have tried to introduce ID cards but failed from opposition across the political spectrum. In a recent consultation, 70% of people were against the idea, but the Home Secretary seems deaf to this. The ID cards will contain biometric information such as iris scans and fingerprints to determine identity and are supposed to reduce terrorism and benefit fraud. But ID cards won't stop suicide bombers, and most benefit fraud is due to people lying about their situation rather than their identity. ID cards will be a massive boon for forgers, thus creating a huge new opportunity for organised crime. The cards have also been found to increase racial tension in other European countries, with minorities being disproportionately targeted for ID checks. Home Secretary Blunkett cannot trial ID cards without new legislation, but he's managed to sneak through this by proposing a trial of credit card-sized biometric passports in a market town in Britain soon. Legislation to introduce the cards is timetabled for October. Once the public are sufficiently softened up to these cards, it would be a very simple matter for an RFID chip to be placed in their head, which would allow the police to scan a card from metres away and pull up any information on the individual from a central database. Last week, the government announced plans to produce a database containing information on every one of Britain's 11 million children and indirectly their parents and carers. Government documents describe this as improving information sharing between agencies to ensure all local authorities have a list of children in their area, the services each child has had contact with, and the contact details of the relevant professionals who work with them. If these files were retained or even added to after a person's childhood, in a generation, the government would have a very detailed file on every single British citizen, which a large number of government departments could access. Police chiefs will also be expected to call for the creation of a massive database containing the DNA of every person in Britain to aid crime detection. For more information, check out www.privacyinternational.org.
We'll
never lived by the gun, yet he died by one. This man, Martin Luther King, senior son, a gentleman of great capability, who never knew the meaning of the word enemy. A man who had devoted his life to fight that all American Negroes must get civil rights. I say his works must be continued, although he's dead. So Negroes, don't forget the great things that Martin said. Like, leave your guns at home, don't walk with weapons. Violence cannot solve the situation. We want the whites to know, believe wholeheartedly. We want them as our friends and not as enemy. For as enemy will bring riot in this land, and that would not be good for no American. Call him a genius, a messiah, or different things, but I say Martin was a king of all kings. From Texas down to Florida, New York City, yes, and even Georgia, the entire Negro population. Yes, they had Martin Luther King as a champion, a man who stood tall and had no fear, and made about 350 speeches a year. Now tell me, how can we forget that blessed day? In the civil rights march, listen what he said. He said, I have a dream, I have a vision, and this is what Martin made us to understand. In his vision, this is what he see. One day black and white will be living so happy. Little black children and little white children, one day walking the streets of America as friends. From the Black Hills of Dakota to Mississippi, hand in hand in racial equality. But now Martin Luther is dead and gone. I say that his good works must go on. His business is now left entirely in the hands of his wife and Reverend Abernathy. So these two must now fight wholeheartedly, just to make Martin's dreams a reality. If not the whole, but a part at least, show the world that black and white could live in peace. So good luck, Mistress King, my blessing to you. West Indians say success in everything you do. Though it may take some time, but one should keep asking, that they should judge a man by his heart and not his skin. Remember, Martin also said that time is nothing, but only how man use time. Good time then means something. So don't forget the song of your dear husband that says, we shall overcome, we shall overcome.
The average North American consumes 5 times more than a Mexican, 10 times more than a Chinese person, and 30 times more than a person from India. We are the most voracious consumers in the world, a world that could die because of the way we North Americans live. Give it a rest. November 28th is Buy Nothing Day.
Demonstrators besiege Dungavel refugee prison. Sticks, boots and bare fists beat a rhythm of resistance on the razor wire fence around Scotland's refugee prison, Dungavel, last Saturday, the 6th of September. Over 1,000 demonstrators travelled to the South Lanarkshire countryside to demand the closure of Dungavel and freedom for the men, women and children imprisoned within. Refugee Mercy Akolo, clutching her one-year-old child, Bessie, spoke movingly about the oppressive conditions she and her baby had to endure living in Dungavel until a court victory set her free last week. Solicitor Amer Anwar urged people to attend Dungavel's detainees' court cases and, if possible, to offer these refugees hospitality in their home, thus enabling more refugees to be freed on bail, like Mercy Akolo, now staying with MSP Rosie Kane. Demonstrators called for ongoing action to shut down Dungavel. 1, 2, 3, 4, we don't want Dungavel no more. 5, 6, 7, 8, why don't "We don't want your racist state," furiously chanted a group of young Scottish Asian women. Protesters came from far and wide, locals from Ayrshire, friends of refugees mingling with banners from Campsfield and Manchester, from the EIS Scottish Teachers Union, the Glasgow Campaign to Welcome Refugees, and many more.
Students block streets in Salvador, Brazil. For more than 10 days, thousands of students in Salvador, Brazil... thousands of students in Salvador, Brazil's third largest city, have been blocking streets downtown to protest at a raise on bus fares. After the August the 28th announcement of a 15% rise on bus fares, hundreds of high school students left school and blocked the streets. The success of the actions on the first day took thousands of others to the street the following days. Several thousands have been protesting daily since then. Most of the city traffic has simply stopped in downtown areas. The blockades are decentralised and organisation has been spontaneous and horizontal. Most students come from poor areas and complain that the raise on bus fares will significantly affect their families' incomes. After 5 days of protest, representatives from student unions made an agreement with authorities giving students discount fares during weekends. They already have discounts on weekdays. But students who organised without the union simply ignored the deal and kept protesting until the raise is recalled. In the past days, police have began to violently repress the students, even though many of them are only 10 years old. On September the 7th, Brazil's Independence Day, 2,000 students protested and blocked the parade, which had to be cancelled. One child was run over by a car and died at one of the blockades.
President, don't you kill for me.
Don't use my taxes for your insanity.
I said, hey, Mr. President, don't you maim for me.
This succession needs psychiatry.
You've got the whole world hating us from sea to shining sea. The economy's in the toilet, so what do? You make richer, richer, richer while we get screwed. Banging them war drums won't drown out that tune. Your legacy's soon to be pissed away too. I said, hey, President, don't you kill for me.
Don't rule my country and say you did it for me.
I said, hey, Mr. President, don't you maim for me.
After Iraq, what will we see?
'Cause in your new world order, they hate us from sea to sea. Say you're sick and tired, who gives a damn? Our boys will soon be down, just like down in Vietnam. And collateral damage will be hard to ignore when it's a monument of corpses bigger than Hoover Dam. I said, hey, Mr. President, don't you care for me.
They're not toy soldiers, they have family.
I said, hey, Mr. President, don't you maim for me.
Missiles are WMD.
More Osamas will come from your lunacy. Sharon's a man of peace. I'm in shock and awe. Stem cells are all safe, but the humans want mercy. I said, hey, the President, don't kill me.
Kill Saddam, not civilians for me.
I said, hey, President, don't you maim for me.
Little children are able to flee.
'Cause in your new world order, they hate us from sea to sea.
You're listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance FM 104.4, bypassing the corporate media machine.
And next up, we bring you a roundup of the last kind of week of the protests against the arms fair in East London.
After a huge run-up to Europe's largest arms fair held in London, a whole series of direct actions protesting against it before it had even started, last week saw the accumulation of a week of events directly opposing what campaigners called the Death Fair, officially known as DICEI, D-S-E-I, that's Defence Systems and Equipment International. There were counter-conferences, workshops, press conferences, film screenings, comedies, gigs, and all manner of events running alongside. Campaigners also set up their own convergence centre for the week, which came under constant surveillance by the police. In the final days before the DICEI arms fair started, entrances were blockaded with people locking themselves together and using scaffolding tripods to block access. There was a march in central London, as well as many office occupations, and even waterborne actions as activists in boats tried to block warships from entering the exhibition harbour. Paul Weaver, spokesperson from DICEI, organisers' spearhead, was at pins to stress that it was not an arms fair, but an exhibition. He is quoted as saying, "It is like any other trade exhibition. It's like the motor show in Birmingham or exhibitions at Earls Court. This just happens to be for the defence industry." Activists, anti-arms organisations, students and the public, angry both about the items on sale and the well-known human rights-abusing countries invited and the devastation caused by weapons and munitions, attempted to shut down DICEI.
Two main days of action saw anti-arms activists repeatedly blocking access to the roads to the Excel Centre in London's Docklands, where the DICEI Arms Fair was being held. On the second day of mass actions, which was Wednesday, the day that bargaining at the arms fair began in earnest, and the day that general press were prohibited from entering, the Docklands Light Railway, DLR, was stopped several times as protesters chained themselves to the carriages. Others attempted to lock themselves to cars in order to block roads, while groups of demonstrators constantly moved around the area of the exhibition, blockading roads. Several even managed to get inside the arms fair. One group set up their own fake company, Affinity PR, complete with fake website and business cards, and staged a protest inside, unfurling a banner on top of an armoured personnel carrier, while others chained themselves to it. Later on in the day, a Reclaim the Streets party blocked the A13 main road, as well as Canning Town roundabout, before police in riot gear surrounded the groups and detained them for several hours. On September the 11th, Trafalgar Square became Red Square, as anti-arms trade campaigners filled its famous fountain with fake blood. September the 11th was also the auspicious date chosen for the DICEI DMA gala dinner at the Royal Lancaster Hotel in central London. Arms dealers dined in luxury while around the world people remembered the tragic events in America 2 years ago. Anti-arms fair protesters and peace activists showed their disgust outside the hotel throughout the evening with a noise demonstration. Diners arriving were greeted with shouts of "How many children have you killed today?" while the surrounding streets were repeatedly blocked by cyclists and drummers. Hundreds of police, some in riot gear, sealed the area off and were overly aggressive, injuring at least one person who needed hospitalisation. At least one person infiltrated the hotel itself dressed in a ball dress, while free food was given out as people stayed late into the night making as much noise as possible, banging pots and pans. After holding their arms fair gala dinner on September the 11th, the world's arms industry left the Lancaster Hotel under heavy police guard. They were able to leave the area via Lancaster Gate tube station, which, closed to members of the public, was commandeered for arms dealer-only transport.
I tried to go clean from protesting, but I'm a recidivist. My government behaving with unlimited wickedness. In the interest of peace is how a liar wages war, then clamors for more. I wish we had elections every day. Wave the ballot in the air like a sign when I say, democracy delivered by the bomb and the gun. Is terror elsewhere in the world I'm from?
Yeah, I got a special delivery.
I've got a special delivery.
I've got a special delivery.
You do a special delivery?
Do you cheer for the once and for all of an enemy whose hand all man Don was on in 8-3? But who now
exemplifies all evil. What you get for shaking hands with people
who represent the vast and sinister interests of industry.
We protect the free trade world, so don't dare try to stop us. We deliver them bullets and sell them their coffins.
Yeah, I got a special delivery. I've got a special delivery.
I've got a special delivery.
Your special delivery.
And I wish that I could afford the ear of Bush II. I'd ask, is it your favorite philosopher who recommend invading and exterminating all who defy us? Crying out justice, but seeking out triumphs. Was it your Christ, unbeloved of empires? One nailed his ass to a post, he expired. A terrorist, as Roman evidence showed, put down like a retard on the death row. In Texas, I guess, I fled, right, George? Ain't that how every war gets scored? Big gun wins, winner gets a free turn. Your mind drifts to the next country in your axis, to all the cool bomb drops you get to call. Deliver refresh from the fourth right to y'all.
Here's your special delivery.
Since the 1st of September, almost 150 people have been arrested in protests against the arms fair. Corporate media coverage of the arms fair was quite extensive across both print, television and radio media. Policing tactics have been condemned by a wide range of people, and Liberty has won the right to seek a High Court review over the use of Section 44 of the Terrorist Act 2000, which has been widely used to stop and search large numbers of protesters. The police spokesperson Greg Trotter said their police operation was very patient, very sensitive and very low-key. Indie Media has been reporting over the last year on the extensive use of Section 44 of the Terrorism Act against peace campaigners, but this time the mainstream media really ran with it, with coverage across the country. Initially, a Scotland Yard spokesperson denied to the BBC that the terrorism legislation was being employed, but quickly backtracked as evidence was presented to the contrary. Indie Media volunteers were also targeted under the terrorism legislation whilst setting up media facilities and whilst filming on the streets and conducting interviews. Liberty solicitor Mona Arshai said the Home Secretary gave a clear undertaking to the House of Commons that Section 44 notices would only be used where there is good reason to suspect terrorist activity. The people in Docklands are legitimate demonstrators and it is quite shocking they are being treated as potential terrorists. We will do everything in our power to protect the right of every citizen to peacefully protest. Stephen Norris, Conservative candidate for London Mayor, said this is a wholly inappropriate way for the government and police to react. Powers such as this should be used extremely sparingly and certainly not in this case. Simon Hughes, the Lib Dem mayoral candidate and Home Affairs spokesman, said the Act properly gives additional powers to the police where there is a risk of terrorist activity. But these powers absolutely must not become the basis for regular policing. I'm going to raise this issue with the Metropolitan Police Commissioner today as a matter of urgency. Protecting ourselves against terrorism, a terrorist attack, must not come at the expense of the freedom of the individual. Jenny Jones, the deputy mayor from the Green Party, said the misuse of anti-terrorism legislation undermines the fight against terrorism. It is, of course, ironic that it has been used to suppress peaceful protest against the sort of arms fair at which one of the most feared terrorist weapons, surface-to-air missiles, which can bring down commercial planes, have been brought and sold. I will be using my position on the police authority to pose some awkward questions to senior police officers. Mayor Ken Livingstone said Londoners have a democratic right to express their views through peaceful protest within the law. It does not seem appropriate that powers in the Terrorism Act 2000 should be used when policing such a peaceful protest. I will be asking the Metropolitan Police Service for an explanation of what powers were used and for what purpose on this occasion.
As the story gathered pace in the media, the Home Secretary, David Blunkett, demanded an explanation from the Metropolitan Police as to why they were using the anti-terrorist legislation against protesters. He said, quote, "I have asked that the head of the counter-terrorism branch should report back on why it was that they chose to use that particular part of the counter-terrorism legislation rather than wider public order legislation." Sharmi Chakrabarti, the director of Liberty, accused Mr. Blunkett of, quote, "passing the buck" to Scotland Yard over the use of these draconian powers. Meanwhile, the Mirror newspaper ran a story which claimed that Scotland Yard itself had wanted to take action against dozens of firms for exhibiting at the arms fair without legal certification, but that they were blocked at ministerial level. Spearhead, the organising company of Dicey, was unavailable for comment. A Scotland Yard spokesman said, "A written warning has been given to the exhibitors who have not complied with UK licensing laws." And in a document that the Mirror says was leaked to it, Chief Inspector Stephen Lee of the Metropolitan Police Firearms Inquiry Teams warned a Home Office official that, quote, "the integrity of the police force cannot be put in such an insidious position as it now stands. I will be asking the Firearms Inquiry Team officers to enforce the law."
Citizens, at this hour, American and coalition forces are in the early stages of military operations to disarm Iraq, to free its people, and to defend the world from grave danger.
The opening stages of the disarmament of the Iraqi regime have begun. The president will address the nation at 10:15.
The criminal, Junior Bush, committed, he and his aides, his crime that he was threatening Iraq with, kid. And humanity.
That's March 19th, 2003. The bells of war, kid. I'm writing this right before the war begins. It's 10 p.m. I spoke too soon. It's 10:15, and here come the goons on a TV screen. Peace is doomed. At least it seems by coalition means the ends are never justified. Machiavelli lied to you, justify the loss of innocent lives. Live from the Oval Office, off with his heading for a coffin. Cause hard luck softens fears for chemical tea parties in Boston. But what about the go? We ain't felt one blow from this so-called war on terror. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but bombs over Baghdad came true for Junior. Saddam wanted to debate, but we'd rather bomb sooner than discuss with our fellow men. Crude tactics from a yellow-bellied Texan. Flowing fountains of reason, so bump this track or call me out for treason. I believe what I believe in, and I believe in this country. If it weren't for some things worth fighting for, scoring 7 years of fear. But it's the potential that keeps me here, the land of opportunity, targets, foreign markets. Now my fellow citizens, watch as civilians pay the price for freedom. The unbalanced axis of evil will lead them and bleed them down for the resources which forces dependency on the U.S. presidency. Notes with quotes like, may God bless. We made this mess, now let's clean up Iraq and find out who's next on the war of terrorism checklist. It's getting reckless, so change the name to Operation Iraqi Freedom. As the media continues to feed on what's already been chewed, like ABC, CNN, I see BS News. With every button I press, clues but no answers to reporters. Lies on the Kuwaiti border make no sense. Fucking journalists, primetime drama, bullshit. There's a fine line between ignorance and bliss. And yo, I see it. It makes me sick. So from this day forth and for eternity to come, conflict creates conflict with nowhere to run until the second coming of God, son. Remember, W is not one, even if you don't got one. Dollar, holler at your forefathers to redistribute power to all the people. The ruling system must reflect our decisions like prisms while I spark the ism. America free. Is America free? Power to the people, power to me.
The people of the United States.
Not in my name, Dunny.
You're listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance FM 104.4. Your radical radio.
That's it for this week.
We're almost out of time now. Just to say on the stories about the arms fair protests and, of course, the WTO in Cancun and the latest information on the G8 Diaz inquiries, check out the Indie Media website, and you know where that is. It's www.indiemedia.org.uk.
Okay, and coming up, we have an interview with Richard Perez, who produced and directed, in a partnership, the film Unprecedented, which was shown at one of our monthly indie media screenings at the Spitz on Monday. And this is an interview where he discusses what made him make Unprecedented.
Here with Richard Ray Paris. And Richard Ray Paris has just made a film called Unprecedented, which is about the presidential election of George Bush. And last night at the Spitfield screening, Rick showed Unprecedented and did a talk. And just wanted to have a talk, really, about the repression at the moment following the Iraqi war and just generally the disappearances of people of Asian origin.
Yeah, it's very sad that this sort of, the American administration has just sort of unleashed this at home in the States, a covert war rounding up Muslim immigrants and deporting them, you know, who've committed no crime other than trying to survive economically and who've been otherwise productive members of the American society and economy. And then there's the explicit, horrible, deadly war that they've exported and imposed on the world. It's actually very tragic and disturbing. You know, the U.S. wields so much destructive power and is unilaterally imposing it. I mean, in the case with the U.K., they managed to convince the U.K., the Blair administration, to be complicit with this. But, you know, for the most part, it's an American-driven policy with utter disregard for what the rest of the world thinks. You know, when I tour with the documentary Unprecedented, you know, about the stolen presidential election, you know, we had no idea it would lead to this, that his administration would, but it makes perfect sense because, you know, the administration that seized power by deception and lies and the like is going to act deceptively and lie to carry out their agenda.
Okay. How are ordinary people reacting to President Bush? Are they supportive of him or is there opposition to him?
Well, in sort of middle America, which is a sort of the sort of common blue-blooded American that are proud of their country and that are that don't take easily to criticizing their government, they still support him. However, people are starting to question the wisdom of this war because it's gotten the post-war plan has proved to be very sloppy, and they see that Americans are dying and being put in harm's way, and the lies are starting to come out about the existence of weapons of mass destruction. So the support is eroding. But I think America was very vulnerable, especially after 9/11, and thought that this is something that had to be done. I think over time people are realizing that it's equating the atrocities of the Saddam Hussein regime with the atrocities of 9/11, there's really a feeble connection.
About the kind of presidential election, is there any kind of judicial challenge? What has been the process? Are people still trying to challenge the current Bush regime?
Not in a legal capacity regarding the election. Unfortunately, the election culminated with the judicial stamp of approval when the highest court in the United States, the U.S. Supreme Court, determined that, you know, recounting the ballots in Florida was not constitutional, was not a legal recount. After they determined that and stopped the count, and they didn't redefine a recount, they could have said, okay, we think the counting this way is illegal. Here's a remedy. You must proceed in this way. They didn't do that. Once they did that, there is no higher court to which to appeal. It's done. And once he is, so that paved the way for him to be inaugurated, George W. Bush. Once he is inaugurated, the only way you can remove him through office is through impeachment. And that comes through some, you know, gross violation while he's in office. You know, the Republicans and the Democrats, if they were in the House, they would use this too. But they are they really resort to this sort of jingoistic patriotism, you know, to the brave firemen put their lives on the line, aren't they archetypical Americans and heroes? And then George Bush implemented these massive tax cuts, and these tax cuts, they cut social services all across the country, and they also affected what they call the first responders, people who respond to disastrous and emergencies, and that means firemen. And so it's the actions speak louder than words. The words are, we love our heroes and the policemen who did everything they could, you know, and put their lives on the line, but we're not going to compensate them. They're certainly not worth paying.
What is the response of Americans to the film Unprecedented? How wide an audience is it receiving in the States?
Well, up to now, it's been a limited... it's reached a limited audience, partly because of the distribution. We've screened at about 40 film festivals in the States, and we've had probably nearly 100 community-based screenings where organizations would call their membership to look at the film. We've sold thousands and thousands of videotapes. Yeah, uniformly, except in very rare instances, people have loved the film. They find it convincing, reasonable. They find new information, particularly with how African-American voters and Democratic voters were purged from the voter rolls, and it really makes them angry. Most people, when surveyed, they think that George Bush became the president or won the election through a technicality, and those people who believe that and see our film realize that it wasn't a technicality, it really was a stolen election and a manipulated election. And it's not that we are conspiracy theorists and just are making this stuff up. We really stuck only to evidence and points that we can prove without a doubt, stuff that we had the documentary evidence for, because we knew we would come under a lot of scrutiny, and we wanted to maintain our credibility, and it absolutely comes across to the viewers.
And has there been any kind of very right-wing Republican response to your film?
Yeah, usually they're immediately, you know, when we started screening it in Florida, which was the first place in the country we started screening it, their response was, it's America's past, it's over, let's move on. So they were promoting this sort of collective national amnesia. So that, don't think about it, it's old news, it's irrelevant. And especially after 9/11. It means nothing because we're under attack, because the rest of the world hates freedom. It's the most insulting comment you hear when he gets up there and say they hate American freedom and a way of life. Don't insult my intelligence. And don't insult the intelligence of the American people. And the media, I mean, they just, like, disseminate it. You know, they're just like proliferated. They've become the administration's publicist. It's getting a little bit better now when, you know, you can only watch so many soldiers in Iraq get picked off when you realize, hey, maybe this plan isn't working out like it should, you know, and they can't find, you know, a speck of, you know, chemical agents and the like, and they're saying, maybe things aren't how he painted them. But, I mean, they're part of how we got in this mess.
What's going to be your next project after Unprecedented?
Well, I have a couple of projects in development, and one is I haven't gotten the green light on it, but it's less overtly political, and it's about it's a sort of subtle class comparison among children in Los Angeles in three different neighborhoods that are each writing a symphony. The LA Philharmonic goes into a school in the barrio, one in a black ghetto, and one in a wealthy wealthy neighborhood near Beverly Hills, and teaches these kids to write a symphony in 10 weeks. So I'll be following these kids as they do their symphony, and ultimately I want to bring them together.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
And where is Unprecedented going next in the UK?
Tomorrow, which will be the 17th of September 2003, we'll be in Glasgow. On the 18th, the following day, we'll be in Edinburgh. In November, I think the tentative date is the 13th, we'll be screening at the Dock House, which is the Riverside Theater. And we're trying to set up a whole bunch of other screenings. There's been some